This is 91.7 WVXU, Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're finally in that part of the year when you're likely spending more time outside than in, perhaps working in your yard or garden. We're going to talk today about what you should be focusing on now and what problems you might be facing with your lawn, plants, and trees. Joining me to talk about all things horticultural are Campbell County Extension Agent for Horticulture, David Kester, and Neighborhood Garden Coordinator with the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati, Peter Hunninger. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I give out that phone number. I want to remind everyone that this is a show we tend to get a lot of phone calls, but they tend to come in sort of at the end and then everybody can't get on. So if you do have a question, you want to get in line to get on the air, you want to make that call now at 513-419-7100. So we had a pretty rough winter. And how are things coming back? What's it look like this year?
Well, we've seen a lot of damage and we went through many years of I guess we were spoiled by the winter temperatures that we had, the mild winters, and a lot of things such as crepe myrtle and southern magnolias and even our knockout roses came through those years without any problems. But this year we had Mother Nature threw us that correction, and a lot of those things suffered. We've lost some plants, and of course we saw just tremendous dieback on a lot of things.
So what do you mean dieback? What is that?
Well, even hollies and boxwood, you saw, the plants weren't killed, but we saw damage to the ends of the branches, dieback. They'll be fine, but you'll have to cut the dead wood out of them. Japanese maples, again, we saw dieback on those. And, most of the knockout roses really, the top 12 to 18 inches were killed back, and we had to prune pretty deeply on those to bring them out.
I had a neighbor take hers down to, really
sure.
Small, but they will come back?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we noticed the same thing. A lot of people had figs, and Chicago Hardy is one variety that was very popular and had done really well for years, and then this year a lot of them have died back all the way to the crown. And I know the one we have at home, at one point I really didn't think it was coming back, but then I guess it was just about 2.5-3 weeks ago that it started regenerating growth. So some of these things, lavender is another one, don't give up the ship right away. Don't get yank it out. Just wait and see is a very good idea.
Well, if you've cut it back, then you're watching for it to grow. What if you haven't cut it back? Is it too late to cut off the dead?
No, I'd cut it back until you come to live wood, or cut it back to the ground, and then just give it some time. It's just amazing. Sometimes you'll give up on a plant, and all of a sudden a bud will break, and you've got in. And usually that root system under there is in good shape, and they'll grow pretty rapidly once they begin to, that bud breaks and they start to grow.
What about trees? I know, David, you've been to our house, and we've got a tree that we're trying to figure out what it is, even. And the leaves never fell off, and now we thought it was dead, but we're just starting to see a little bit of green growth. Should we keep it?
Oh, absolutely. First, we want to find out what that tree is.
Yeah,
so don't do anything to it until we figure out what it is. But obviously, I wouldn't give up on anything. A lot of these things can be pruned. You want to take advantage of the root system that's already established, that's in good shape. So it's obviously with time, you'll want to say, does this tree enhance my landscape or does it detract from it? And if it continues to detract from it in the shape that it's in, then maybe it's time to replace it. But obviously, if landscape plants can be kind of expensive, and you might want to give it some time and prune it a little bit, maybe water it through droughts this summer and see what happens.
What are you seeing with trees, Pete?
Well, the same thing. Mostly I'm working with fruits and vegetables and, fruit trees. And we do see, some pretty heavy dieback in some of the varieties that are, a little bit more susceptible, the Asian persimmons. The growth on this one tree we have, it's a dwarf tree, it's about 6 years old. We lost about, at least 30-35% of the ends of the branches. And then there's new growth coming out. So in the end, the tree will be good, but that kind of damage. The other thing is that because it was cold, warmed up, then we got that snow and that harsh, really harsh cold. A lot of the trees were already starting to bud out and beginning to bloom, and then we got that second wave of cold, it just knocked everything out. And so we lost almost all the fruit on the peaches and also on plums.
I was in northern Ohio this weekend and getting strawberries. I'm from that area, and it's really a great area for fresh fruits and vegetables. And when we're home in the summer, we always get peaches, and they told me no peaches this year. Are we hearing a lot of that?
Well, Michigan peaches were, they got the late freeze, and it devastated. But you know what's interesting about that, I think, is that Michigan actually grows peaches better than we do here in Kentucky, and it's the fluctuating temperatures here in our area in Ohio, southern Ohio, and Kentucky that really cause the damage, because we go above freezing and then we go drop back below. When it fluctuates in Michigan or up in northern Ohio, it'll fluctuate up and down, but it usually stays below freezing, so you don't get that. But as soon as it goes above freezing, we break some dormancy in those plants, and then when it returns to cold weather, we get damage and we lose our fruit.
What about not necessarily fruit-bearing trees, but just the rest of the big trees you have in your yard? Was the winter hard on those well-established trees?
I haven't seen too much damage on those. Again, you're going to see a little bit of branch dieback, and that can be either left alone or if it's severe, just have somebody remove it. We obviously don't recommend people climb trees to remove limbs, but a lot of times they can just be left alone and they'll kind of take care of themselves.
One thing with some of the larger properties, larger trees on our property, I've noticed too is that the deadwood that was there, it just thawing out and freezing, it made it a little bit more weaker, and then we got some strong winds, and the trees did a lot of self pruning, so we were picking up a lot of firewood and starter material this spring, which
is
not.
So you can use it, right?
Yeah, so it's not a bad thing as long as you're not standing underneath it when it falls.
What other things should people be doing right about now in terms of their lawns and their gardens? What kind of work should they be doing?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you're finished fertilizing your lawn. You're done with that. You should be maybe now being sure that you mow your lawns on a frequent basis. Nothing can prevent weeds better than a sharp lawnmower and keeping anything from going to seed out there. Your grass will regenerate itself. It's conditioned to be cut. Weeds aren't. So the more you cut the weeds down, keep them from going to seed, the tougher you're going to make it on them, the thicker you're going to make your turf, so you can make it naturally resistant to weeds.
Pete, what do you think we should be doing?
Well, it's a similar kind of logic when doing your vegetable gardening, too, is you keep up with the weeds when they're younger using a hoe, a stirrup hoe, or a slicing hoe. You can you cut them off at ground level, and that'll deter most of them, as long as they're, you're grasses and things like that will want to come back as they come back from the roots. But even through repeated cutting them back and depriving them of, photosynthesis, you can get successfully kind of weed them and keep them thinned back.
Peter, when I was growing up gardening, I always had this habit of I love the way my garden looked after it was cultivated, and I would cultivate so deep.
Yeah.
And it became a habit. And all I was doing, of course, was bringing more weed seeds to the surface. And really what you want to do, of course, now I learned that you just shave those top weeds off and don't cultivate deep.
Yeah. Define cultivate. What do you mean?
Well, to actually take a hoe and you're cultivating, you're breaking that soil up. And I used to have a pointed hoe, and I would go, it was 3 to 4 inches deep, and really, because I liked the way that looked in the garden, but that was not the effective way to control weeds.
So just top them off.
Just really scratch that surface.
So you're not trying to get the root out?
No. Well, no, you really just are trying to weeds don't grow like grasses, and if you cut the tops of them off, you'll starve them to death eventually. And you don't want to bring a lot of weed seeds need sunlight to germinate. And so if you keep them buried deeply instead of bringing them to the surface, you will really combat them.
Yeah. And that's also, like one big complaint people have in gardens are bindweed, and it's extremely aggressive. But if you go in and start chopping up that little root rhizome, it breaks into a it really stimulates growth, and then also every little piece will start another plant. Oh. So, a lot of the places recommend just using a slicing hoe, cutting it off at ground level, and just being persistent about it. Because even if they're saying if you pull it out, and even though you get it, 3 or 4 inches of the root, it still will stimulate more growth deep down in the soil and send shoots back up more than if you just cut it. So I've been, and so that's...
Well, that's
been,
something. All these years, I never heard that one. That's new information.
Yeah,
that's
so I think actually it was on Purdue's website, actually, I read it. And so we've been trying that, and it seems to be working out. I mean, that's a tenacious weed.
when I was in college, I worked on the University of Kentucky South Farm, and all the farm crew back then would come in at lunch, and they all had these really minute hoes that, and they would spend half their lunch hour eating, and the other half they would spend sharpening the hoe, and they would go out and they would just be razor sharp, and they would just shave the top of that soil and just get the weed, and that's all. And you know, it's because it was so foreign to me, because I was used to much deeper cultivation.
Yeah, and you have to get your weather conditions right, because the soil is too damp and stuff, it'll jam up or clog up the blade of the hoe, and you kind of, it's best for it to be dry. And in fact, when you're in a period of drought and you still have some weeds coming up, if you use these hoes, like on a low wheel cultivator with a slicing hoe or swing blade, you go over and you just basically, you kind of just shave the soil about a quarter inch or less underneath it. But then that cuts off the weed, but also creates what some people refer to as a dust mulch. And so that sort of aerates the soil a little bit, and it actually kind of shades the soil because it's a texture. And yet, also, you break up that kind of hard clay pad on the top. So if you do get some rain, it provides a little bit of an entry point for water to re-enter the soil.
We had a call from Kate from Western Hills who says she's having a problem with woodpeckers pecking on her cedar shingled house. Is there anything she can do about that, and why are they doing that?
Pellet gun.
That was Peter.
Wait a minute here.
I think those woodpeckers are protected. But anyway... You know, they are obviously there searching for insects. I think it may be a temporary thing. I am not sure what you can use you may try some scare tactics.
She just said they only do it in the fall. Is that?
Okay.
I'm not that familiar with their, you know, their habits, but the one thing is like they're going after insects. So if you have like moss or something growing on the side of a house, or it's the wood is rotting, or you have knot holes in your shakes, and there's, you know, little decomposing areas, they'll go right into that. So keeping the house properly maintained and painted is probably your best defense.
Yeah, there is a sapsucker, which is very closely related to the woodpecker, and they go around and they put holes in trees, and then those holes will fill up with sap, and they come back and they're almost perfectly aligned holes, and it looks like somebody precisely drilled a little small hole in the tree all the way around it, and that's the sapsucker, and they're a lot of times on pines.
We're talking about your yard, your gardens, your trees, and some of the creatures that want to cause them havoc. And we're going to continue our discussion in just a moment. You can call us at 513-419-7100. We'll be getting to your calls after the break, or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking this afternoon about your yard and garden. Joining me are Campbell County Extension Agent for Horticulture David Kester and Neighborhood Garden Coordinator with the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati Peter Huttinger. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And a lot of folks have found our phone number. We're going to get to the phones right now. Elizabeth is calling from Westchester. Hi, Elizabeth. What's your question?
Yes, thank you. I have a knockout rose bush that is blooming beautifully, but the leaves have a lot of holes in them, and it seems as though something is eating them, but I can't see anything on them, and I'm wondering if there's something I could spray on them to try and kill whatever's eating holes in the leaves.
I'm not sure what insect that would be, but I would really try some of the safer materials. Maybe a neem would be a product that's pretty broad spectrum. The pyrethrins would be another option that would be safe, I think. And should neem, N-E-E-M. And then the other one would be pyrethrin, some of P-Y-R-E-T-H-R-I-N. those would be safe, and I think you'd be you'd get pretty good control with those.
Okay, because my neighbors, it's not happening to my neighbors at all. So.
Odd.
Thanks so much, Elizabeth. We appreciate your call. Libby is calling from Mount Auburn. Hi, Libby.
Hi there. So I have, I had one question, but then you guys said something, so now I have two. The thing, when you guys were talking about just clipping the weeds at the top.
Yes.
Would that include, I have these vines that come up in my garden.
Yeah, it's probably
vine
weed.
Not to pull the root out and just clip the top?
That's what I've read on a couple horticultural websites that they're saying, just to slice it just at or just below ground level. And yeah, and if you have it in two different beds, you could, you know, continue doing what you're doing and do the other one and see if it makes a difference. But
that's a good idea. I like science.
But this year, and that's been my plan of attack.
You might want to try cutting it a couple times, and then maybe if you could get some mulch and put over that. And you might even want to try some, put some newspaper over it, and then put some organic material on top of the newspaper, and that might get rid of it.
Okay. And then my original question was, I love poppies, and I'm from the West Coast where they're everywhere, and I have thrown out the seeds every winter at the last snow to try to make them come up, and I can't get them to grow here. I don't know if it's placement. I don't know. Is it soil? But I can take that answer off the air.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Libby.
You know, we've got a number of poppies that do well here. I have had more luck buying the plants at a perennial nursery and putting those out, and then generally they will continue to propagate themselves. I'm not sure which poppy you're trying to grow. Maybe it's it may be something that's just you know, suited to the West Coast and not here, but we do have a number of poppies that will do well in our area, and you might want to go to a good nursery and check in their perennial section, and you'll be able to find some that you'll like.
Bill wrote on Facebook, what's a good ground cover for a hillside, not ivy, something native?
Yeah, I don't have that one.
Boy, that's a native. You know, there are some wood plants that might do well there. I have, you know, I've had probably decent luck with the vinca, but I don't believe that's a native. I'm not real sure what you can use in that situation. You may want to, I would try to go to a really good nursery and ask them. They've got a little bit more knowledge about specific ground cover plants. And, you know, there may be some options along those lines, such as various grasses and things like that, that you might want to try in there. But I'm not real sure a native ground cover that would be thick enough that would really suppress weeds on a hillside.
Well, there are some native sedges and different grasses. And at the Civic Garden Center at the Green Learning Station, as part of the landscaping there, there are a couple different varieties are used. Just off the top of my head, I don't know the names of them, but if you contacted Ryan or Bennett at the Civic Garden Center, they can provide you with the names of the varieties. And I would really recommend coming and looking at what they have, because some of them are really quite attractive, and I think that they could really work well on a hillside.
That's a great question. We need to come up with a good answer for you, and I think you ought to go to one of our really good nurseries here in the greater Cincinnati area and ask them.
Now, we talked earlier about woodpeckers, and several people have written in on Facebook with some ideas. Mary from Blue Ash had the same woodpecker problem. She said she put out suet, and then that solved it. I guess they left her siding alone. Tim from Ripley called, said he had woodpeckers around the house, and they were going after carpenter bees. So perhaps that's part of the problem there.
You know, and I think that strategy is an interesting to talk about, like putting out the suet, because we do the same thing in vegetable gardening, like to help control flea beetles. They really like arugula, and so some people grow some arugula, and that's what they call a trap crop. And so so sometimes when you have young lettuces, birds will come in and peck on it during dry seasons, and what they're trying to do is to get water. So if you put out some water, that may deter the birds. They'll come in for the water and leave the plants alone.
And carpenter bees can be extremely destructive. And I'll tell you, I'd take the woodpecker over the carpenter bees any time. And if they were taking care of that problem, I'd be really happy.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. We're talking about your lawns and gardens today with David Kester and Peter Hunninger. Jim is calling from Coleraine. Hi, Jim. What's your question?
Yes, I try to garden organically, but the chickweed and clover was kind of getting away from me in the yard, so I put down a weed and feed product that I later read contains 2,4-D and is banned in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if there are safer products to use that I might use on my lawn for that, whether they be organic or maybe safer than the weed and feed product.
You know, I'm not aware of anything that's going to selectively take those plants out of your land, out of the lawn, an organic product for that. They do sell some organic herbicides, but I'm not positive whether they will take that out of the chickweed. You're going to lose here as soon as it gets hot. The chickweed will be gone. It'll be back next year. And then your clover, a lot of people, believe it or not, really kind of enjoy having clover in there because it's a legume and it actually fixes nitrogen. I can understand why you don't like it, but I'll tell you, it is extremely difficult to control in a landscape lawn, and it really takes kind of some liquid herbicides, and even the 2,4-D products are not that good on removing clover. And I guess, you know, my answer would be try to live with it.
Yeah. I think it also, if you look at the clovers from a point of view of an aesthetic point of view, I think that if they're kind of modeled in, it's like even with the small violets. The other thing to consider is that the clover is forage for native insects as well as honeybees. And so there is an environmental ecological benefit to having that there. And like Dave said, I mean, farmers grow clovers as cover crops and turn them in or use them in the actual pathways because they do fix nitrogen.
Jim, thanks so much for your call. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Sean's calling from Augusta. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is that I've heard on KET that you do not have to till. You can just mulch your ground. And this man said he has done this for 30 years. He has never tilled his land, and plants, he just makes a small hole, put his plants there every year, and doesn't have to worry about all the weeds and also mulch, tilling and so on. And I was wondering what is the actual benefit of this and if this is really possible to be done.
Peter?
Well, it's referred to as no-till gardening and no-till farming. And it usually isn't. I mean, there's usually a certain point where you need to go in and cultivate the soil and do some turning, even with larger commercial farming when they talk about organic no-till, not conventional no-till. There's usually, I think it's on the fourth year or something, they go in and turn in the crops. You know, the biggest problem with the no-till that you're going to face is at the very beginning, what you need to do is get your perennial weeds in control. And that's when, and then you start building, layers, successive layers of mulch and let that material decompose and become the humus in the soil to grow in. And you can do it. I've seen people do it. But if you're someone who wants a tidy looking garden, there is. I mean, if you look on, say places like YouTube and Facebook and stuff, or permaculture sites, and you look at photographs of these areas, I mean, they're very unruly garden patches. But they're producing huge amounts of food. And the idea is that it's lower impact in terms of your labor, lower labor. And I've seen it work wonderfully. It's just a question of, you know, what your tolerance and for the aesthetics and the productivity of it is.
Another term is lasagna gardening, and you might want to look that up because that's, and it's just as Peter said, you're adding organic layers and you're building up rather than going down. And it can be extremely effective, and it's amazing the great soil that you can build up doing that. But look up lasagna gardening because that's another term for it.
Yeah. But, excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean.
But just following up on that just a little bit, when Dave was talking about deep tilling, waking up the seed bed, I mean, that's after a certain point when you get your perennial weeds under control with the no-till, the lasagna-type styles, is that you keep building up, and they're not going down and stirring up the soil and agitating and activating all these different weed seeds. So it's kind of, you got to do one or the other.
We talked about somebody was looking for a native hillside cover. Gary called, and he said he uses something called Crown Vetch.
Yeah, it's really what the highway departments use an awful lot of on right-of-ways and things like that. The only, I guess, issue I have with Crown Vetch is it's, the seed is very expensive, it is slow to establish, and it's dead-looking all winter long. It will not cover during the winter. It's a, you know, it's an annual plant. It's a perennial, but it dies back at the first frost. It's really a wonderful legume. Wildlife love it. Rabbits love it, and it's a neat plant, but during the growing season, it's beautiful. Pink flower on it and everything, but it will not cover in the winter.
Eric's calling from Mount Auburn. Hi, Eric. What's your question?
I bought four seedlings. Let's see. They are American chestnuts. Supposedly back crossed enough so that they're resistant to the blight. I planted all four, and three of them leafed out. They're only about a foot high, and the fourth one did not. It looked like the terminal inch of the seedling had died. So I nipped it off there with a cutter, and I just wondered if there's anything I can do to stimulate what's left of that one seedling to sprout or to put out leaves.
Well, first of all, congratulations on trying with the American chestnut. Isn't that like a 1/16th or something cross? It's the American chestnut is really an interesting story, and it's one of those things that of all the trees that we've lost, the elm and but the American chestnut had just tremendous value to the Appalachians and the people in eastern Kentucky and throughout that area. And of course, we lost it. And the trees that you're getting, the one that you have, you know, three is not bad. And I would I really think you've probably lost the other one because I think by now you would see it. But take care of them and really, you know, make sure you report your success or failure with them because I think that's interesting.
What is the tree site that the
Cincinnati
Zoo does?
Steve Foltz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it's the plant site or the tree site or something where they're asking people to, you know, sign up on the website and record these different things.
Right.
But the nut trees I've found, we've over the last 5 or 6 years, we've been working with the chestnut hybrids, hazelnuts, pecan, and hardy almonds.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very slow to establish.
Right.
We've had the most luck with the pecans.
So you got to be patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a very long, slow-growing tree. But the one thing that he did right, be curious if you agree with this, David, is that he got a young whip, a young sapling, because you know, nut trees have very long tap roots.
Yeah.
And if you go with an instant nursery kind of larger trees, you're probably going to have lower success. He may be an old man by the time he gets a nut, but it'll be a healthy tree.
And the nut trees are a lot more expensive than the fruit trees are.
Yeah.
You're going to pay a premium for those.
Yeah, and if you're looking for to have a nut that you can grow at home, that it will come to creating nuts earlier than others and is doing really well in this area, the hazelnuts. The native hazelnuts produce a very small nut that's tasty but a really a lot of work to open, and a true battle with squirrels. So we've now been planting in some of the community gardens, and I have some at home, different varieties of the European cultivars, Jefferson and Yamhill are one of them, and they're starting to produce catkins now after 3 years, and so I'll be curious to see how that goes. But the hazelnuts are really attractive, and they seem to be doing really well in this climate. They did fantastic through the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Lina is calling. I think it's from South Charleston, Ohio. Is that right, Lina?
Yes, and it's pronounced Rena.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I discovered that at my new house, I have four wild rhubarb plants, and I don't know when to pick them.
When do they pick?
Yeah.
Usually, if the stalks are of size, just go ahead and you cut those stalks. If they send up the seed head, of course, you should remove that. You don't want them going to seed. And you can, you know, harvest pretty much indiscriminately throughout the summer. You know, if obviously the leaves are poisonous, but the stalk is definitely edible.
Are the stalks red or green?
I hear rhubarb pie in my future.
Are the stalks?
Wait one second.
Are the stalks green or red?
They're green.
Okay, yeah, that's probably Victoria or Victorian. Yeah. Some people call it, and that's the one the red varieties we've had trouble keeping alive over multiple years. That variety that you have is very, very cold hardy and mm-hmm. does really well. We've already, I don't know, we've probably harvested about at least 5, 6, 7 pounds off of the one at the People's Garden downtown already this year, and it's in probably another 3 weeks we'll be harvesting again.
Thanks so much for your
call.
Thank
you very much.
We appreciate it. Bye-bye. Mary Ellen's calling from Loveland. Hi, Mary Ellen. What's your question?
Hi. My question is, I would like to look for a way to discourage the deer from enjoying the buds on my rose bushes.
How about discouraging the deer from anything in the yard? Mm. What was the? We tried deer scram this year. It's the first time we've tried it. It seems to be working better than anything else.
That product we've had real good luck with at the gardens, and the people that I recommend it to report really good luck with it now. It isn't season-long control. You do have to replenish it, but it isn't more. It's a lot more control than just, you know, apply it and then it rains and then you lose it. It's more residual than that. You know, there's just so many things that you can try. Soap, but you have to change the brands of soap out there. You know, hanging bars of soap, various places in your landscape will deter them, but they get used to that. My dogs are very good at just the scent of my dog. So you might want to try some fur or hair from pets in that area. You know, if you were out in the country, I'd probably recommend that you put some sort of a fencing and possibly an electric fence up. You know, I understand your frustration. I get frustrated when I continually get this call and I just don't have one good answer for you.
Yeah. But you know, those repellents, the scram materials do work. The thing is, it's like a lot of these things, you have to, every time it rains, you have to replace it. And the problem is, if you whisk them one window and they get in just over one night, they can do so much damage, it's really frustrating. But some people in community gardens, in their garden beds, they were experimenting with, and they felt they had some success. They were these posts, and they had a little solar charger on top, and you would put a scent, it's like an apple scent on it, and the deer would come over and sniff that, and it would, like a little electric fence charge it would get. Mm-hmm. In the city of Cincinnati, electric fences aren't legal, but these little solitary units, I think that no one's going to mess with you about.
Mary Ellen, thanks for your call. We certainly appreciate it. I think we have a line open now at 513-419-7100 if you want to get in. We have many people waiting. We'll get to them in just a moment. We're talking today about lawns and gardens. Again, you can call us or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking about your yard and garden. Joining me are Campbell County Extension Agent for Horticulture, David Kester, and Neighborhood Garden Coordinator with the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati, Peter Huttinger. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook and Twitter. Anne wrote on Facebook, she has more finished compost than she needs. Can she put it on roses, or is that too much food?
Not at all. No, that's roses are heavy feeders, and it'd be excellent. And matter of fact, you know, you can actually sprinkle compost over a lawn, and it's a slow release of fertilizer. It'll break down the thatch. You can't use it real heavily, but boy, that's such a wonderful problem to have, is too much compost. I wish I had that situation myself.
Okay, Julie emailed, cherry laurels took a beating. Is there anything she can do besides cutting out the dead wood and cutting back?
That's one we forgot about. Cherry laurels did take a tough winter. And yeah, just cut it back. You might want to fertilize them a little bit and make sure you give them some water. If we go through dry periods, just kind of pamper them a little bit because they've been through a tough winter and they should regenerate and be fine.
Marianne emailed. She has a nuisance plant that resembles a winter aconite, if I'm saying that rightly, with yellow blooms. How can she get rid of it? And do you know what it is? That resembles a winter aconite, yellow blooms. Any ideas?
Well, it's
I think you've stumped the panel.
Well, yeah. No, it's the I can't believe I can't remember its name.
Okay, they both know it. Well, yeah. How do you get rid of it?
Well, at home, man, I can't. Celandine poppy.
Yeah.
Celandine poppy. You, man, how did I stump that? I guess it's just such a disturbing plant to me. It is very, very invasive. And, you know, some people resort to using chemicals. But what we do at home is that, you know, to top it off and put the material in a lawn waste bag and send it off. You know, some people will dig it. We'll usually top it off and put cardboard or newspaper on top of it, wood chips on top of it. Now, depending if you have a yard and what you're doing, that's not going to be. We're living a little bit borderline rural area. We can get away with that. So at the Civic Garden Center, I know that they dig it and dispose of it, and then they also smother it. And sometimes
so send it off-site when you
yeah,
dig
and
it
it's also like with the garlic mustard. You want to get that early, mm-hmm. and you know, pull it and get it by the root. But you want to also get that and then, you know, dispose of the plant material itself. You don't want to compost it.
Lynn's calling from Anderson. Hi, Lynn. What's your question?
We have a maple tree that about at the end of last summer lost about a third of its leaves. Like branches would die back, and then this winter it. This spring it has come back, but it's looking worse than it did at the end of the summer. A lot of trees in my neighborhood seem to be doing the exact same thing, and I'm wondering if it's drought damage and if the tree is salvageable or if it's just cut it down at this point.
You know, I'm glad you said drought damage, because a lot of people, we could have had, and we did have, a drought 5 years ago, and it can just be showing up, the symptoms, within last year and this year. Trees are a little bit different than people are when they, you know, people, we usually show symptoms pretty quickly, but trees are somewhat slow, and a drought that occurred 5 years ago can still be impacting that tree. There are, of course, some root diseases that could be involved, verticillium wilt, things like that. It can attract or can attack a weakened tree. So there could be a root system problem there. And then when a weakened tree is more vulnerable to a lot of other things, if it's a really valuable tree to you, I would suggest you have an arborist take a look at it and see what they recommend. Generally, if it's on one third of the tree, that can indicate a root problem on that side of the tree. And they would be best equipped to kind of determine that.
How do you find an arborist?
In the phone book, look for, and you can go online to the International Society of Arboriculture, and they will list all the certified area arborists in this area. And you can find one there. And I would really recommend that if it's a valuable tree, to search them out and have them take a look at it.
Lynn, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100. Mark is calling from Pleasant Ridge. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
A couple of questions. Flea control, what product can I use to put down in my yard to control fleas? And mosquito traps, do they really work?
Okay.
Fleas. I have heard of people treating their lawns with various chemicals. 7, I think, is one that you can do. I'm not really sure that it's as effective at just treating your pet. Fleas are usually gonna be attracted, obviously, to the fur and the hair on a dog or a cat, and I think it's a lot of better to just treat them rather than to treat the lawn. And then mosquito traps, I'm not real familiar with them. I know there's various ones on the market, and I think the best thing to do is try to eliminate any water, standing water around your property. I haven't had too many mosquito problems as of yet at home. But and then, you know, I think some of the citronella candles can be somewhat effective, not great, but and then just some of the other products that you can apply to your skin.
Yeah, I think
well, that's what we were trying to avoid, you know, applying products to our skin. I've heard that there are plants that help repel mosquitoes that you can plant, and also we do treat our dog, but you know, our neighbors have dogs, and and it's just that my wife has bad reactions to flea bites.
I see.
We do treat the dog, so the dog has been treated for fleas.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks for your call. I guess we just have a few ideas there. Peter, did you have anything else?
Well, just prevention in terms of mosquitoes, prevention is huge. And I think that sometimes people don't realize, even if you have like a dark shaded area of your garden that's overgrown, if you get air and light in there and some ventilation, that creates an environment that the mosquitoes don't like, and you can really make some real progress down in there. And I grew
or
up.
Or bring some bats, right? Don't bats.
Yeah, bats.
Mosquitoes.
Well, yeah, bats would be good. But the there are those the traps that have light in them, and so in the evening the mosquitoes will fly to the trap and get electrocuted, but they're not as effective. If you're out there in the daytime, they're not as effective because they're not quite as much of a lure.
John's calling from Mount Lookout. Hi, John. What's your question?
Hi. I have a slope of euonymus ground cover, and grass grows up in it. And the only way I can get rid of it is to get down on my hands and knees and pull it out. Is there some way you can think of controlling it?
There is a chemical that you can get. And I cannot remember the name, but if you go to your garden center, there's one called Over the Top, and it can be applied over the top of euonymus, and it will only take care of the grass that's in there. And but there is a herbicide that will do that, and it'll take it out without harming the euonymus.
Wow, great.
Thanks for your call, John. We appreciate it. Rachel has several 15-inch boxwoods that are 40% dead. Is it worth trying to salvage them or just pull them out?
That's all going to depend on what they look like after you've cut them back. They will definitely come back. They're going to look probably very bad for a year or so. But you will, when you cut them back, you'll get new growth coming out on them. Kind of cut them back uniformly so that they all grow back uniformly. But within a year or so, you're not going to, they're going to be smaller, but they'll be fine.
Yeah, if they're established, if any shrub or anything, if it's established and you've got a good root ball, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. At this point, at least just do what Dave did and give it a shot. And if you don't like it, pull them out next year.
Tim emailed 80% of his ivy has died. Should he rip it all up and start over?
No, I think ivy's going to come back. It looks horrible right now. I doubt that 80% of it's dead. I think 80% of it's damaged, but I think it'll come back. That would be a great one for some fertilizer, maybe compost over the top of it a little bit. That I think you're going to see it return. We had some damage to ivy at the office, but it's now starting to really sprout, and the new foliage is just beautiful. So.
Susan's calling from Covington. Hi, Susan. What's your question?
My question is, we have what we've been told is bent grass in our lawn, and it's very invasive, moves into our garden beds, and it's kind of crowding out the grass in our yard. I just wondered if there's any effective treatment for that.
God, boy, bent grass, of course, is a... it's a lawn or a golf course type of grass. And it can be invasive, as you said. It's really thick, I'm sure. And for something like that, I try to get away from the chemicals. But I really think when it's actively growing and green, one of the glyphosate products would take it out. And then you can replant, but you've got to make sure that you get 100% kill on it, because it will spread that way.
Thanks for your call, Susan. Rob's calling from Mechanicsburg. Hi, Rob.
Hello there.
What's your question?
I have three dawn redwood trees I planted in my yard. I planted them like 3 years ago, and they're already probably about 15 feet tall. But they're starting to curl. The limbs on them are starting to curl on the east side of all three trees. and we usually get or easterly winds. And I have read someplace that they're delicate and they don't make for good wind breaks. And I was just wondering if there was anything I could do about that, or is that just the inherent nature of the tree?
If all three of them are doing it, it's obviously a site situation. I would, if there's any way that you could plant something on the windward side of them to break that wind a little bit, it might help. I'm not real familiar with why that would be happening, but that's the only thing that's such a neat tree. I'm not aware of any kind of an issue with it. That's one of the wonderful things about it, is that it really doesn't have any problems.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Rob. We appreciate it. Joanne's calling from Fairfield. Hi, Joanne. What's your question?
I have some fully grown pear tree that every year we get lots and lots of pears on it, but the squirrels eat them. Mm. Is there anything we can do that we can finally get a pear off of these trees?
Pick them first. The thing about – no, I'm not kidding or being sarcastic. The pears will – you can pick, semi-green and then ripen in a cardboard box wrapped in newspaper or on a windowsill, and they'll still retain their flavor. Unlike a tomato, which obviously isn't a fruit. Well, it is a fruit, but not a fruit tree, and or apples and other things where you get like an inferior product. But they actually, a lot of people, recommend actually harvesting pears early, and that's what I do at home, and that's what I do at the Center for Chemical and Addictions Treatment Garden. And also something, underripe pears are very tasty in salads and with a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper.
Good luck, Joanne. We appreciate your call.
Yeah. Hey, it's nothing too. We're talking about things surviving the winter. We've been experimenting with 5 years now on currants and gooseberries, and they all did really well and made it through the winter, and we're getting like huge crops off of them. We're already harvesting the red currants. So people out there are interested in your edible landscaping. I would really recommend looking into gooseberries and the red currants. Red currants are very attractive.
Yeah.
And the we've been doing with the gooseberries, we do Pixwell, and it is a little thorny. Mm-hmm. But if you have a border where you don't want people cutting through your yard, it can be dual purpose.
I had them over winter in pots, which is really pretty unheard of. But it is a Canadian New York State type of plant, and so they're very hardy here.
Brad's calling from Wyoming. Hi, Brad.
Hi. I just have some additional information for controlling lesser celandine.
Oh, good.
And although I'm not averse to using conventional chemicals, I have found that Scythe herbicidal soap is very, very effective, and homeowners, landowners need to get out in February, March, and April to be making applications, because that's when the plant is emerging. There's, if you're out in the woods, there are very few wildflowers out at that time, and so any, collateral damage that you might get from overspray is not an issue.
And, Brad, thank you so much.
Yeah,
we appreciate it. We appreciate the call. Trudy is calling from Mason. Hi, Trudy. What's your question?
Hi, Beth. Thank you for taking my call. I was actually calling because we used a commercial weed killer product on a lawn that specifically on the product said that it was safe for lawn application. And after applying it to our lawn, a major portion, about 50% of our front lawn and a back lawn, is now yellow and dead. And when we called the product company, we were told that it's normally expected that the lawn should yellow for a short period of time, but that we should expect the grass to come back, and it's been more than 4 weeks.
We've got about 20 seconds, so I'm going to let them answer real quickly here.
Well, I hope it does. Watch it, and I would really document some pictures and make sure you've got all that, so that you've got some ammunition should you need to take that a step further.
As always, more questions than time, gentlemen. We're going to have you back soon, I hope. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And we've been talking about lawns and gardens with Campbell County Extension Agent for Horticulture David Kester and Neighborhood Garden Coordinator with the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati, Peter Huttinger. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeyer. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis. We also had help today from Jim Nolan. Our engineering staff is Don Danko, Bill Dean, and Mike McInish. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.